Now will you turn with me in your Bible so that we might consider together the message and the meaning, or the meaning and the message of Psalm number 30. And as I indicated when we read the scriptures, in coming to consider this psalm, we must not be distracted by the title. Because the general opinion of those who know about such things is that the title was added much later than the time when David underwent this particular experience that he speaks about in the psalm. And all you need to do is to read through this psalm fairly quickly, and you will realize that it has to do with a specific and deeply moving, perhaps we ought to say deeply painful experience in David's life. An experience, whatever it was, that he never forgot. And his gratitude to God is expressed in words which he and others used at significant times, in terms not only of gratitude to God, and not only in terms of thanksgiving to God, but in terms of recommitment to God. And one of the things that this 30th Psalm should do for us tonight is to make us look back. Whatever our age, whatever the length of our Christian experience, this psalm is urging us to look back and to review God's dealings with us, and to bring home to our hearts the tremendous debt that we owe to the amazing grace of God. The grace of God that first of all sought us and found us and brought us to salvation in Jesus Christ. The same grace of God that sought us and found us time after time when we have wandered and strayed from His good and perfect will. The grace of God that has kept us, and has kept us far more than we have ever been aware of, because there have been times when we have felt remarkably secure, spiritually and humanly, oblivious to the fact that sometimes at these very stages in our lives, the grace of God was standing guard over us with unceasing vigilance, and we didn't know that we were in danger. And the grace of God, that same grace of God, amazing grace indeed, that has restored us to God and to fellowship and to service and to happiness more times than we care to count. And these, my friends, are the kind of thoughts that should lie very, very much at the heart of all that we mean by Christian worship. A recognition of the debt that we owe, and a heart response to God out of gratitude for what He has done for us. Now, one of the things that has impressed me more and more as we have studied the Psalms is David's honesty. Oh, you say that seems to be a very simple statement to make. Well, but I've been around quite a long time, and I don't know that Christians are always honest with each other, or for that matter with their minister. But David is honest. And as we read through the Psalms, you can check this for yourself. There's only 150 Psalms. It won't do you any harm to read them all. One of the things that David did in his honesty was this. If he felt cast down or under pressure or depressed, he said so. If David feels that he has sinned and failed, he says so. If he feels desolate and alone and utterly friendless, he says so. And if he feels for some reason or other, recognized or not recognized, that he is adrift from God, he says that he is adrift from God. And if he feels that his own sin and his own stubbornness and his own complacency, that is spiritual complacency, have been the cause of the situation, he says so. And he says so in this psalm. Now, this kind of honesty is a great thing, it is a good thing, and it is a means of grace. That is a help to us in our spiritual lives. And it is really a case of being honest with God. And there's no point in being anything other than honest with God, because you can't kid him on. You can't deceive him. It is a case of being honest with God. It is a case of being honest with ourselves. And it is a case of being honest with others. And this, in turn, can become the basis of true Christian fellowship, because in so doing, our spiritual experiences are shared. And it is the sharing of Christian experience that David speaks about in the fourth verse of the psalm when he says, "Sing praises to the Lord, O you saints, all you other believers. You consider what God has done for you. You consider what God has done for me. And I will consider what God has done for you. And together we shall sing praise to his name. And in no time at all we'll be saying, oh, for a thousand tongues to sing my great Redeemer's praise." Now, in this psalm, we see, or we learn, that one of the hardest things to be honest about is our own spiritual life and our own spiritual state or condition, especially if in our own heart of hearts we know that we have slipped on to a lower level of commitment. It's not easy if someone, perhaps even a minister, says to you, how are you in your Christian life just now? It is not easy to be honest and say, well, I'm not the Christian I once was. I don't pray the way that I once prayed, and I don't take my share in the worship of the church and the prayer life of the church in the way that I once did. It's not easy to be honest. It's far easier when that kind of question is addressed to us to give a great list of all the different Christian things that we are involved in. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we are spiritually on the level that we once were on. And it is very difficult to be honest about our own spiritual life, even more if, in fact, we have become spiritually complacent And it is this spiritual complacency that lies at the heart of this psalm. Look at verses 6 and 7. As for me, I said in my prosperity. Now you see, David knew that God had blessed him. God had established him. God had blessed his person. God had blessed his work. God had blessed his people. As for me, I said in my prosperity, I shall never be moved. I'll never move from the spiritual stand that now I take as my stand. By thy favor, O Lord, thou hadst established me as a strong mountain. Then thou didst hide thy face. Our midnight is thy smile withdrawn. That's what we sang earlier in the service. I said in my prosperity, spiritually speaking, I'm not one of these weak and wobbly Christians. I'm not one of these turncoats. I'm not likely to be found amongst backsliders. I said in my prosperity, I shall never be moved. But thou didst hide thy face. God was grieved. God was hurt. God could no longer smile upon this man, David, whom he regarded with immense love and affection. But God was hurt. And God's smile was withdrawn from David. And in time, David knew it. And he was dismayed. Now you see, this is the key to the whole of David's complicated experience, whatever this experience was, but David describes it in very, very vivid terms. When David says, thou hast, in verse 1, thou hast drawn me up, the commentators tell me that this is a phrase that speaks about the cranking of the handle that slowly brings up the bucket of water from the deep, deep well. You've drawn me up from the depths. Oh, you say, what were the depths? I don't know. He speaks in verse 3 about Sheol and the darkness of Sheol and being among those who go down to the pit, whatever that means. Whatever it means, it doesn't sound very nice at all. Whatever the particular experience, it was a very deep and a very dark and a very sore and a very costly experience for David. And at the heart of it, causing it, and causing it to last longer than it needed to last, was his spiritual complacency. David, you see, forgot. It's easy to do. He forgot that all that he was, and all that he had done, and all that he had accomplished, and all that he had to show for his life and for his service, was God's doing. It was the work of God's grace. But he forgot. He wasn't a novice anymore. Oh, he recognized that there were people who hadn't come to faith all that long, and they were young in years and young in experience, and no doubt they would grow to be more stable Christians. Ah, but said David, I'm established. I'm spiritually strong. But then you see, he was spiritually complacent. And God withdrew. I don't like speaking about this. God withdrew. I suppose many people like myself would bear testimony to the fact that for quite a number of Sundays recently over the past weeks and months, especially perhaps in the Sunday evening, but Sunday morning as well, we have been significantly aware of the presence of God. Now, supposing next Sunday we gather for the service, and we don't have that awareness of God's presence. Supposing next Sunday we were to gather here as usual and sing all the hymns that we like to sing, but there came upon us an awareness that God was not here. Wouldn't we be dismayed? I would. I would want to go home. Now apply that illustration to our personal lives. And let me ask you quite sincerely, with no desire to hurt you at all, or to hurt myself, are we with God the way we once were? I know a lot of people don't like to sing the hymn, "Oh, for a Closer Walk with God." In some ways there's an element of the depressive in the hymn, but it's got the lines in it that says, "Where is the blessedness I knew when first I saw the Lord? Where is the soul-refreshing view of Jesus and His Word?" My dear people, if we ever lose that freshness, if we ever lose that awareness of the presence of God with us, then we'll be like David. We will be dismayed. I was very deeply moved when I read that verse. "Thou didst hide thy face, and I was dismayed." And it was clear eventually to David, but I believe it was clear to others before it was clear to David, that God was not with David, and God was not with David's work, as God had been with his person and with his work in earlier days. And it's clear from the psalm and some of the things that David says that there were some people who were really quite glad to see this. There were some people who were quite glad to think that David had failed. He says in verse 1 that eventually God did not let his foes rejoice over him, but his enemies did rejoice. Can I put into your mind the kind of things they might have been saying as they became aware of the fact that David wasn't the man that he once had been? Can you not imagine people saying, "Oh, well, he had it coming"? You may say, "Oh, preacher, Christians wouldn't say things like that." Yes, they would. And yes, they have. They looked at David, they were aware of the fact that there was a freshness and there was a vitality, there was an incisiveness that had gone from his Christian life. And they were glad and they rejoiced and they said, "Well, he had it coming. It's time that he was brought down a peg or two." Can you not imagine people saying, "Oh, we always said that there wasn't really much to him, spiritually speaking." Can you imagine people saying, "Ah, yes, God has taken him to task"? Now, that was true. But God had taken David to task not primarily because of his failure. God had taken David to task and was dealing with him quite sternly withdrawing his fellowship and his favor from David, because David was a chosen man. He was a man called to service, and he was a man called to the future. And God's determination was, I am not going to let this man of mine degenerate into an unfruitful believer, an unfruitful servant of God. And so God took David to task. You know the passage in Hebrews chapter 12, whom the Lord loves, he chastens, he rebukes, he scolds, he is stern. And because God the Father loves like that, there are times when we may be crying, oh God, where are you? Why don't you bless me the way that you once blessed me? And God withdraws. He's totally silent. And the heart of the problem is spiritual complacency. Look at the psalm, because in the first 5 verses of the psalm, David pours out his heart to God. In verses 1, 2, and 3, it's a solo. And in verses 4 and 5, it is a chorus. And David begins by saying, I will extol thee, O God. That singing praises to God, rejoicing in God. I will extol thee, O Lord. And then he goes on to give a list of reasons why he extols God. I said to my brother on the phone the other night that some of the commentators say that David gives a list of 6 reasons, but I can't find 6 reasons. So my brother said, well, just be vague and say a list of reasons. Well, there's a list of reasons. I will extol thee, O Lord. Oh, here's one reason. For thou hast drawn me up from a deep pit. And thou hast healed me, verse 2. Part of the situation seemed to have involved sickness. And so was the scorn and the laughter of his enemies. And in verse 3, David seems to use words that suggest trouble as deep and as dark as the pit. Oh, you say, what does it mean, the pit? I don't know, but I don't like it. Trouble as deep and as dark and as cold as death. And says David, you have brought up my soul from Sheol. Oh God, it's been like a resurrection from the dead. At one stage, everything seemed finished. And David felt that God had finished with him. That's why he was dismayed. At one stage it seemed all was finished, and then that came the situation when everything was totally transformed. Oh, I can understand why this man poured out his heart in praise to God. We haven't time tonight to look up the references, but in Psalm 118, the psalmist writes, this is the Lord's doing and marvelous in our eyes. Oh, said David, I'm back, I'm back, I'm back. Oh, said David, God's back with me, God's back with me. This is the Lord's doing and marvelous in our eyes. And in Psalm 126, again, the psalmist gives expression to the heart cry of the people, and he says, the Lord has done great things for us, whereof we are glad. And it is because of this in verses 4 and 5 that David says, sing praises to the Lord, O you his saints. He says, oh look, he says, I can't express this by myself. Join in with me and let us sing together to the Lord. This opening part of the psalm is full of contrast. In verse 2, O Lord, my God, I cried to thee for help. And there's a lot of soreness in that word, cried. But notice he says, O Lord, my God. That touched me very deeply. O Lord, my God, I cried out to thee for help. It's almost as if David is saying that he could cope with anything so long as God with him. And now in verse 4 he sings praise. Sing praises to the Lord, O you his saints, and give thanks to his holy name. Some versions have it, give thanks to his holiness. Oh, you say, why bring in holiness here? Well, I think it is because David realizes that God's holy name includes all God's goodness and mercy and kindness and tenderness and faithfulness. There is no shadow in God's holiness. And holiness has a lot to do with wholeness and with health. Sing praise and give thanks to his holy name. Remembering that all that God does and all that God allows is right and good. And as the New Testament says, in all things, God works for good to them that love him. And therefore, God's anger and God's frown, even when necessary, is a good thing. Put it like this. God looked upon David and saw his spiritual complacency. God was grieved. And the whole heart desire of God was to bring his beloved servant back to fellowship and back to service. And in order to do so, God withdrew. And there came upon David's mind and heart and spirit a coldness and an aloneness. And gradually he became aware of it, that God wasn't with him. And he was dismayed. And that's when he began to think, I can do without anything. I can do without everything. So long as I'm with God. And that's when David started to come back to God. You notice here in verse 5 that David says, his anger is but for a moment. His favor is for a lifetime. Weeping may tarry for the night, but joy comes with the morning. The anger and the weeping, they're temporary. They come into our lives as lodgers. Sometimes only bed and breakfast lodgers, because Long time is not necessary if our hearts are sensitive to God. Now, David, we must make plain, David is not talking here, nor are we talking about that costly sorrow that comes in bereavement, in sickness, and in parting, and in many of the painful human situations. I'm so glad that there is recorded twice in the book of Revelation, chapter 7 and chapter 21, the declaration that God is the God who wipes away all tears from their eyes. What a kind God he is. Have you ever watched a parent with a child, a little child who's maybe fallen, hurt his knee or something like that, and is crying? And the arms of the parent are there, and out comes the hanky to wipe away the tears. It's all right. It's going to be all right. God. Oh, what a God who wipes away the tears from our eyes. But we are talking here not of that kind of sorrowful situation. We are talking rather of the battles of experience. Paul speaks about this slight momentary affliction which is preparing for us an eternal weight of glory beyond comparison. I quoted earlier in the sermon, Hebrews chapter 12, is it verse 11? Whom the Lord loves, he chastens. And didn't we sing in that hymn before the sermon that the Father's hand will never cause his child a needless tear? But he does sometimes cause tears. David says, thou didst hide thy face, and I was dismayed. I didn't want to make reference to the story of Samson. I thought about it during preparation. I thought about it when I was looking over my notes before the service tonight. I didn't want to refer to it. I feel I must. You know the story of Samson in the book of Judges. That self-indulgent, willful servant of God who at times had been so magnificently used by God. You remember there came a time when Samson roused himself and he said, I shall go out as before to do the work of the Lord. And he did not know that the Lord had departed from him. You know, the purpose of what God is saying to us tonight is not to hurt us, save only as that is necessary. The purpose of God tonight is to bring us back to himself. Back close to God. And so in verses 1 to 5, David pours out his heart. Then in verses 6 and 7, he makes his confession. Perhaps we've said enough already. This confession in verses 6 and 7, in which he recognizes that the root cause of the sore and the distressing experiences he was going through was nothing other and nothing less than spiritual complacency. He assumed that his strength, his spiritual strength, his spiritual position, his spiritual integrity, his spiritual balance were all established. He assumed his spiritual maturity. He regarded himself as a leader, as a guide of others in relation to God. He had reached the stage, and oh, how sad it is when we reach this stage, but he had reached the stage where he felt that he was no longer in need of advice the way that he once sought advice. He was no longer in need of counsel the way that he once used to seek counsel. He had reached the stage where he really felt that he was no longer in need of teaching. Oh, he was glad to listen to sermons, and especially glad to listen to sermons if they were good, sound biblical sermons. But they didn't really apply to him, because you see, he was established. It's a very serious spiritual condition if we come to church without the specific desire to listen for what God will be saying to us personally. David assumed his spiritual maturity and his spiritual integrity. He forgot his dependence on God. As for me, I said in my prosperity, I shall never be moved. And he took all his spiritual privileges and all his spiritual blessings for granted, with no gratitude to God and no gratitude to those by whom God's blessing had come to him. David's life and service were smooth at this time. His path was plain. His work was satisfying. And no doubt David was aware of others, perhaps even critical of others, who weren't as spiritual as they should be, or as committed as they should be. And because David was like this, God was grieved, and God withdrew. Oh, I don't know how often I've looked at that last two lines of verse 7. Thou didst hide thy face, and I was dismayed. How long it took David to realize that he had slipped, I don't know. How long it took David to realize that from being a man absorbed with God, he was now a man absorbed with himself, I don't know. I hope it didn't take too long. And then David became aware of the fact that he had left his first love. And you know, my friends, one of the dangers of a long-established work or a long-established Christian life, especially when we are aware of the fact that God is blessing us, the danger is simply that we will begin to assume that God will always be with us. With the help of commentaries, and I'm not going to give you all the references, I look back to the book of Deuteronomy chapter 8 at verse 11. Listen to this. Take heed lest you forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments and his ordinances and his statutes which I command you this day. Lest when you have eaten and are full. Oh, that applies spiritually. It also applies to all of us when we get on in our lives. And for example, when we don't have to count the pennies anymore. And when our jobs are secure and our houses are secure and our families are secure and all that kind of thing. Oh, take heed lest when you have eaten and are full and have built goodly houses and live in them, and when your herds and flocks multiply and your silver and gold is multiplied and all that you have is multiplied, then your heart be lifted up and you forget the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage, and who led you through the great and terrible wilderness, lest you forget. One of the other references I turn to is one that I often think about in the book of Proverbs, chapter 38, verse 7, where the wise man says, two things I ask of thee, deny them not to me before I die. Remove far from me falsehood and lying. Give me neither poverty nor riches. And that doesn't necessarily mean in cash terms. Poverty and riches can refer to a variety of things, including friends and activities. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food that is needful for me, lest I be full and deny thee and say, who is the Lord? Or lest I be poor and steal and profane the name of my God. I'll be quoting at a wedding tomorrow here in church, as I did last week in another church, and as I've done at the weddings of not a few people who are here in this church tonight. Words of David from Psalm number 16, where he says, I have set the Lord always before me. Because he is at my right hand, I shall not be moved. Therefore, my heart is glad. Because you see, David learned through costly experience, including that withdrawing of God from him, that nothing can compensate for being right with God. And in the last verses of the psalm, and we need to say very little about them, in verses 8 to 12, we have the story of his restoration. To thee, O Lord, I cried. I wonder what he cried. Oh, I think he said, Lord, Lord, I want back. Have you ever prayed a prayer like that? Lord, I want back. Forgive me, Lord, restore me, take me back. To thee, O Lord, I cried, and to the Lord I made supplicate. O Lord, there's no reason why you should take me back, but, O God, because you are who you are and what you are, O Lord, take me back. It's interesting in verse 9 that David seems to be rather blunt with God, and he says, what profit is there in my death if I go down to the pit? Will the dust praise thee? Will it tell of thy faithfulness? I think David is saying, Lord, what use am I like this? What use to God or to man? And Lord, if you leave me like this and I die, that's just one less person to praise thee here upon earth. Verse 10, O Lord, hear, O Lord, and be gracious to me. O Lord, be thou my helper. Help me to come back. There's been such a lot tonight about coming back to God, isn't there? I wonder how many people here tonight need that specific word. And you know, because not because I'm saying it, but because God is saying it, that you have drifted. Lord, help me to come back. And there seems to be in verse 11 and 12 almost instant assurance. Thou hast turned for me my mourning into dancing. Thou hast loosed my sackcloth of misery and repentance and shame and distress. And thou hast girded me with gladness that my soul may praise thee and not be silent. O Lord my God, I will give thanks to thee forever. Yes, as I said earlier on, he is a man who would gladly say, oh, for 1,000 tongues to sing my great Redeemer's praise. He not only wanted me back, he helped me to come back. And oh, what a transformation David feels. I suppose it's expressed best in words of the New Testament, where it speaks about being turned from Satan to God, from darkness to light, from the power of Satan to God, from death unto life. Oh, my dear people, isn't there something inexpressibly precious in knowing that you are right with God, that there's no shadows, that there's no need to be dismayed, that the Lord is not hiding his face? How often I get a smile when I visit some old folk, even sometimes when they're very frail and very weak. And I say to them, haven't you read in the Bible, and haven't you heard it said often in church, the Lord bless you? Oh, what a blessing it is to look into some wrinkled old face with happy eyes as you say these words, the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you his peace. And the same David who went through this costly experience is the David who said, I have set the Lord always before me, because he is at my right hand, I shall not be moved. Therefore,